Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Brought to you, of course, by our friends at Buddy's Goodies and Glass. It's always 420 at Buddy's, baby.
16 yards.
Haven't heard that one in a while.
Heard that one a long
that
time.
Is good. All right, what do we got? Monday Night Football, Lions and Packers tonight. Green Bay giving 11.5. Who do you like tonight, by the way, in that game? Against
the
spread.
Points?
No, against the spread.
Green Bay,
all right,
kinda.
They're giving the points. Dick's taking the Packers and the points. Both teams looking for win number one. Kickoff 5:15. Kevin Harlan, Kurt Warner right here on KJR.
Lamar Jackson, an unbelievable game last night. 3 touchdowns, 107 yards rushing as the Ravens overcome a double-digit fourth-quarter deficit to beat the Chiefs 36-35.
Mariners back at it tonight in the wild card race. 4 games back with 13 games left to play. They're at the A's tonight. Tyler Anderson versus Sean Manaea at 6:40 p.m. from Oakland.
Pete Carroll says the Hawks are not talking to Richard Sherman right now. Meanwhile, Bruce Arians says the Bucks are talking to Richard Sherman right now. And Pete Carroll also says DK feels fine and is not on the injury report.
Why are the Seahawks not talking to Richard Sherman?
Stupid idiot!
I don't get it. More news in the NFL. Colts and Rams over the weekend. Colts lose a close one, but they also find out today that, how about this, Carson Wentz has sprains in both of his ankles.
Oh, jeez.
How do you even deal with that? And Tampa Bay, well, you just did the Sherman story. Never mind, I'm done. That's fine.
Duke has grabbed their 3rd top 10 recruit for the class of 2022. Number 2 ranked Derek Lively committing to the Blue Devils.
And the AP poll, Oregon up to number 3 after their convincing win over Stony Brook over the weekend. And UCLA falls 11 spots to 24 after losing to Fresno State and Jake Haner over the weekend on Saturday. All right, Joe Klatt is going to join us coming up at 4:30 on the air. We'll talk about that Jake Haner story because Klatt was stirring it up, man. He was poking the bear with Husky fans over the weekend, talking about how Jake Haner could start for any team in the Pac-12, and then follows that up, by the way, with a response to his own tweet, "Where you at, Washington fans?" Of course he's stirring it up. Of course he's poking the bear in Seattle. So I don't know. I don't know anybody when Peterson chose Jacob Eason over Jake Haner who thought it was the wrong call to give the ball to Jacob Eason, but I also remember some people that were critical of Chris Peterson for even allowing it to be a race.
I know somebody that said they'd give away their season tickets if Jake Haner was named the starting quarterback.
Is that guy sitting here at the Emerald Queen Casino?
As a matter of fact,
is that guy me?
No.
Okay. And what do you have to say for yourself, pal?
I have to say that Chris Peterson knows a little bit more about coaching quarterbacks because, remember, we all thought Chris Peterson was nuts that it was even a race, that it was even a competition. You're like looking at one guy's 5 foot nothing, the other guy's 6'4 statue, and you're like, how is this even a competition? And yet he took it down to the very last week. And if you had to do it all over again, let's be honest, Husky fans, if we had to do it all over again, you get Jacob Eason in 2019 and you get Dylan Morris in 2020 and 2021, or you get Jake Haner in 19, 20, and 21,
right.
I don't think there's a Husky fan that would not take Jake Haner at this point.
Well, you actually would get Jake Haner in 19, 20,
21,
and 22 because 20's free.
Yep.
So 2017 was the redshirt year. 2018, year one. 2019, year two. Mm-hmm. 2020's free. 21's now, and then 22 is year 4.
And instead, you've got Dylan Morris, and what are you going to do with Sam Heward? Because if you had Sam Heward backing up Jake Haner, it would be a natural transition. Jake Haener starts through Sam Heward. This year would be his true freshman year.
Right.
Next year would be his redshirt freshman year.
He would have 3 years left.
He would have 3 years left to start, and that's absolutely perfect.
Well, but you've got 4 years of Dylan Morris. I mean, you can pull the plug a year early or 2 years early. I mean, look, I like Dylan as a quarterback. I think he's okay. Is he a major difference maker? I don't think so. Not yet. He might be that guy in a couple years from now. I just think this is just the epitome of hindsight, what we're doing
right now. Of course.
It's the absolute epitome because nobody saw this coming. And here's the other part of it, dude. I don't know how Jake Haener would be performing right now behind this offensive line. I mean, I have no idea what Fresno State's line looks like. Right. I saw him play a little bit against UCLA. They looked okay, but who knows? I mean, I don't know of a lot of quarterbacks that could have functioned behind this offensive line the first two games of 2021 with the way the receivers were banged up. I'm not sure if Jake Haener had stayed in Seattle. And let's say he said to himself, you know what, Jacob Eason probably is going to play 1 year here. I'll take off, and then I'll have 3 years to be the starter in 2021 and 22. But then he saw all the other guys that were on the roster at the same time who are now gone. He saw Sam Heward coming in, and he decided to take off. So I don't know. He may have been beaten out by somebody else here if he had stayed in Seattle. I have no clue. If Jake Haener would be the starting quarterback right now. Maybe Peterson retires and Jimmy Lake takes over and he wants a different quarterback besides Jake Haener. So, yeah, it's easy for us to say take out A, insert B, but if we're living in the alternate universe that we are proposing here, who knows what the hell happens in that story? I got no idea.
Well, I'm rooting for Jake Haener.
Of course you are.
Fresno,
good for him.
And Fresno State's having a hell of a season.
Yeah.
And they are a one Jake Haener fumble away from being a top 10 football team in America.
Dennis
right now.
Dodd has him as the number 5 player on his Heisman list.
I saw that.
Right now. I mean, you talk about things that you never thought you'd freaking read, for God. Jake Haener is on a national writer's top 5 for the Heisman. Are you out of your damn mind? It's unbelievable. So, Pete Carroll, we're going to hear a lot more from Pete at 5 o'clock. We'll talk some Dogs as well after their win over Arkansas State over the weekend. We're going to hear from Pete at 5 o'clock. There's a couple of clips I want to play here in a minute, but obviously the conversation with Joel Klatt at 4:30. We're going to talk about how much you can really take from the win over Arkansas State. And I agree with Calkin's piece that he did. I just think it was the only acceptable outcome. Or maybe it was Stoney. I'm not sure who it was. One of their two columnists wrote about that. It really was the only acceptable outcome in the game on Saturday. And I kept tweeting this during the game. You may have noticed it, by the way, that this is the way things are supposed to be. When a team like Arkansas State comes to your stadium, they are supposed to get smacked in the face by a superior football team, and that's what happened. So, I mean, same question that we could ask about the Seahawks, right? How has your mindset changed? Do you feel that much better about Husky football after what you saw Saturday?
I feel better.
Yeah.
I don't feel much better. However, I don't think you can just turn your nose up at 52-3. Because other than Idaho in 2016 and Montana, 2017?
Yeah.
You don't win games that much. I mean, you just don't. I mean, we play cream puffs every single year. Every team plays cream puffs every single year. And every one of those games don't end up in blowouts.
Yeah.
A lot of them end up as 31-20 games where you're like, that was kind of ooky. You know, they kind of overlook that team. And that was
ooky. I like
it.
It
was ooky.
Ooky, yeah.
The one
ooky.
Huge.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Thing that buoyed my confidence for the rest of the season. Jalen McMillan, to me, looks like a difference maker at wide receiver.
Hmm.
Just from the way he runs. I watched him on Saturday. After he made a couple of catches, I was like, oh my God, he's back. How great is this? The ball just...
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy.
Chumba. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
It just disappears into his hands, where it seems like all of the other wide receivers, you kind of hold your breath when the ball comes to them. Terrell Bynum, Devin Culp, you know, all these guys, you're like, is he going to catch the ball? And Jalen McMillan just has the softest hands and is running great routes. And in my opinion, there is no way they lose to Montana if number 11 was playing in that football.
Well, they had no right losing that game matter what.
Agreed. I mean, but this is just a statement I'm making, and I think it's a statement of fact.
Well, yeah, but I mean, even without him, I mean, the fact that they lost to Montana is egregious. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, there's nothing anybody can do to convince me that there's any reasonable excuse that you can come up with for UW losing that game to Montana. So we'll just toss that out. Look, I mean, I'll say this, that it was a great game for him on Saturday. I don't want to take anything away from the kid, but if you're talking about him as a difference maker for UW, that means he's a difference maker when it comes to competing for a Pac-12 championship. And I got to see it more. I got to see it against the better defenses in this conference before I make that statement. So the cool thing about McMillan is confidence is a part of this for sure, especially at wide receiver. And the guy is technically a freshman because last year didn't count. So the guy's got 4 years left to go, and in game number three of his basically college career, he went out and put up 170 yards on Arkansas State. I mean, they did what they were supposed to do. Yep. Again, this is the way things are supposed to be. And I guess the good news about Saturday is, hey, 0-3 would have been a complete disaster. Fire everybody. This thing is broken. It's not going to work. At least we can put that off for a week. I do think this, that whatever equity they built up against Arkansas State, if there is equity there, they'll flush it away if they lose on Saturday.
Yeah, agreed.
They got to beat Cal Saturday. They got to beat Cal.
Not only do they have to beat Cal Saturday, I think they can and maybe have a pretty darn good chance to go on a run here.
Well, they're 7-point favorites on Saturday, so they absolutely can win. Cal's not that good.
No, Cal is not that good.
Cal's not that good. The problem with Cal is they've given you problems for the last 3 years.
They have the Beavers after that. And they have UCLA at home, who Jake Haener just beat after that.
Right,
and then they have Arizona after that, who's like a 90-point underdog to Oregon this week.
Win them all going into Oregon.
Why can't you win them all?
You can. You can win them all. You can. There's no reason why they can't. Absolutely. If this team plays the way we thought they were going to play,
they will win them all. What did we
think before the season even started?
That they'd be undefeated going into Oregon.
There you go.
No, with maybe a Michigan loss.
Pete Carroll spoke today and was asked about Jamal Adams and how they're using him, still trying to kind of figure things out. Here's Pete on that issue.
Through two games, is this how you envision using Jamal Adams? Is that gone according to plan?
Yeah, this is some of it. There's more to do with him. But, yeah, we're moving him around a lot. He has a lot of opportunities. I think he rushed about 7 times yesterday or something like that. You know, so we like him. You know, working the passing game, you know, on the rush aspect of it when we can. And we can't do it a lot, but we can do it some.
Is he so unique and different from what you've had that you're still learning how to use him?
Yeah, I think he's learning too. He's learning how we're using him and how to take advantage of the opportunities that he's getting. He's really an aggressive player, so he really goes for it. And so he has to figure out how to manage that to fit in with his assignments and stuff. But there's more stuff to do with him. You know, we haven't called everything that we have, but he's going to continue to be an active part of it and continue to be moved around.
Yeah, I think that he needs to just be a bigger factor. He needs to be a playmaker. He needs to be able to say, I was responsible for XYZ. And I thought yesterday he was responsible for XYZ, but they were all bad in the game on Sunday against the Titans. I mean, you know, getting out of position, creating giant gaps in the defense, not making plays, not forcing turnovers, not getting sacks. And I don't know. I mean, I said it when the year began. I'll say it again, that I just don't know if blitzing him 100 times over the course of a year is the right call. And I don't, and you know what? I don't think they need to. Maybe in a game like that yesterday when they felt like they were more you know, susceptible to the run, they felt like it was the best thing to do. It obviously didn't work out because you saw the results yesterday. But I just think when you go out and you acquire Carlos Dunlap and you acquire Kerry Hyder and you bring in guys like Taylor and Alton Robinson and you draft L.J. Collier in the first round, this team has plenty of depth on their defensive line. They should not have to be forced to blitz Jamal Adams as much as they are to be able to get to the quarterback.
He needs to color within the lines. You know, you get the kids' meal. My kids get the kids' meals at all the restaurants, right? And you get the crayons. And you just stay within the lines, man. And he comes out there and he just takes his crayon and just goes as hard as he can all over the page.
Well, he's kind of a spaz.
He's a mess. He's an absolute mess. Yeah.
And sometimes that serves him well, right? But he
Not enough.
Well, here's the cool thing about Jamal Adams. He's only in year, what, four? Five in the NFL?
Yeah,
whatever it is.
Five?
So, yeah, he's a young guy. He's got plenty of time to figure it out. But I just think that the idea that you're going to continue to bring this guy as much as you brought him and expect to have that be the only way you can get pressure and blow up run plays. I mean, Jordan Brooks was brought in to do exactly that. Daryl Taylor was brought in to do exactly that. Bobby Wagner had 20 effing tackles yesterday in that game. You don't need Jamal Adams to blitz as much. What I need is for Jamal Adams to be a complete safety.
Yeah.
A complete safety. Pete Carroll also talked about the taunting calls, and not just the one on DJ Reed, but the NFL in general with this new big kick they're on.
There's been a lot of chatter about the taunting penalty. Obviously, DJ got the one. I guess, do you have a view in general of that rule and what the NFL is trying to get done with that?
Yeah, I really respect what they're trying to get done, you know, and they would like the game, you know, to not have that in it. It's a hard transition. I mean, you saw what it took for us to get a penalty there. I think it's we've opened up a bit of a can of worms, you know, and so we got to have to find our way through it here as we go. I don't know how other teams are doing with it, but it hasn't worked well for us so far. It's clear what the rule is, and so we just have to react the right way. It's the reaction of the player in the moment that we have to train, and so you got a lot of guys that have to deal with, you know, those explosive moments, and they've got to really turn their focus away from the opponent, which is, it's a good thought. It's hard to manage it.
He took the onus on himself, and yet that is about as critical of NFL and officiating that you'll hear Pete Carroll. He said, quote, "We kind of opened up a can of worms on this thing," in which I hear a translation of, this is a stupid rule, but hey, we have to live by it because it is a rule.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my reaction would be, why is it relevant if it's stupid? It's the rule. Who cares if it's stupid? Now, you want to change it over the offseason? And they've done that before. They've had some cockamamie stuff. The NFL has said, let's not do that. I just think there's two things going on here. Number one, the fact that DJ Reed yesterday in that game did exactly what the NFL is saying they're going to flag. Looking at a guy, flexing, getting in his face, it's an easy thing. Turn around, do it to the audience. Do I want it to be a rule? No, I don't. But from Pete Carroll's perspective and the planet he lives on, that's irrelevant. The only thing Pete Carroll should be concerned about is what are the rules and what can we do and not do. And if the rules say you can't do what DJ Reed did yesterday, then stop freaking doing it, for God's sakes. I mean, he's lucky it wasn't a bigger play and a bigger moment that cost that team points, as it was a cost him field position, but it could have cost him points. I think from a fan, the conversation about taunting for us is way different than the conversation about taunting for the coaches. Because guys like you and I can say, this is dumb, it's stupid, let's just change it. They got no choice but to live in that world for at least 15 more games until next year. I don't think the fans want it to be a part of the game. I think that there's rules in the NBA, there's rules in baseball, there's rules in the NFL, where you really, from a product perspective, from an entertainment perspective, got to ask yourself, do we really need that as a part of the game? Do you really want a tap on the wrist on a three-point shooter to be a foul? Do you really want that? Do you really want a defensive lineman falling on a quarterback at seconds after he gets rid of a football to be roughing? Do you really want that?
No.
The answer is no. We're going to break. Joel Klatt is going to join us. Talk some college football. His thoughts on UW-Arkansas State is taken. What the hell is happening in Pullman? And did the Huskies make a mistake by choosing Jacob Eason over Jake Haener? Next on 950 KJR.
Tune in tonight for Monday Night Football with Kevin Harlan. Kickoff at 5:15 on your home for every NF's Joel Klatt. Brought to you by Venue Kings. Visit VenueKings.com. Now with Joel Klatt, here's Softy and Dick.
All right, boys and girls, back here at the Emerald Queen Casino. Lions and Packers tonight on Monday Night Football. Speaking of VenueKings.com, you need tickets for the next Seahawks home game. That's Thursday night against the Rams. $109 to get in the door right now at VenueKings.com for that Thursday night game with the Rams. So Huskies get it done against Arkansas State. Cougars blow a big lead on USC and get run in the second half. And here to talk about all of it, our friend from Fox Sports, the great Joel Klatt. Joel, how are you, pal?
Good, bud. How are you guys today?
We are okay. I don't know how much you can glean from the game over Arkansas State. We can talk about that in a second. But I do know this, that I went to bed on Saturday night looking at your Twitter account with you needling Husky fans, including me, about Jake Haener's performance as the Fresno State quarterback against UCLA. So the floor is yours, man. Should Husky fans be up at night thinking about what could have been?
Well, I mean, that's tough, and I wasn't trying to, you know, to needle Washington fans. I just the clear observation watching him play is that this guy would probably start everywhere in the Pac-12 this year. I mean, he's making those type of throws. I'm going to do a giant breakdown on my show this week on Wednesday about his play and how good it actually is. It's not just that they won. It's not just the amount of yards he's throwing for, but just everything about the way that he's playing the position, the recognition of coverage before the snap, the decision-making process and how quick it is, even the decision-making of what type of throw to make. He drops down three quarters. He throws touch passes. He drives the ball into the back shoulder. His ball placement has been absolutely terrific. His toughness is unquestioned. He basically had no hips in that game. His timing was exquisite. The ball placement, like I said, was next level. And listen, if I was Washington, if I was a Washington fan, I'd be like, man, what happened? What could have been? And listen, that's not fair because Chris Peterson said when he made the decision how close it was and that he wanted to get Jake in the game. And there's no telling, you know, what would have happened if both of those players would have played. And he left kind of before that could come to fruition, at least if my memory is serving me correct. Didn't he leave before it ever actually went to the playing field as far as the games go?
Yes, he did. And what was fascinating about all that is Chris Peterson was the one guy that thought this competition between the Jakes should be close. I mean, obviously, every Husky fan was like, dude, play the 6'5 guy that's a first-round potential draft pick. And Chris Peterson, I guess, knew better, right? But do you think that pressure influences coaches in their decisions?
Well, I mean, listen, to be fair to Chris, I don't think he made a definitive decision other than who was going to go out there first. Wouldn't you agree with me? Because he kept saying they will both play, right? Yeah. I mean, like, I don't want to be revisionist. That's the way I remember it.
Yes.
Well, so, that's exactly what happened, and you're right. I think they were going to play both those guys, and then Jake Haener just decided, I'm going to go somewhere where I can be the starting quarterback, where I can really enjoy college football. So I don't blame Jake Haener. I guess the issue is for Husky
and
fans.
And listen, I don't blame Pete either, right? So I guess what I'm trying to do is, like, everyone took that as I was blasting, you know, like Kirby Smart style, like, let Justin Fields get out of the pro. That's not what I was trying to do. I'm just saying the way he's playing now, he would start anywhere in the conference. And a lot of the fan base sentiment, you know, I remember the year before, dang it, I can't remember who you guys were playing, but he threw a pick, and I think it was a pick six.
California.
And just got hammered.
Cal.
That was right. And you guys are playing Cal this week. And just, like, got eviscerated for it. And so, I don't know, maybe that played into his decision. But I will tell you that he played exquisite football, and good for him, right? All of us should root for these kids to find the locations that they're going to thrive in and then go and thrive. And by the way, speaking of thriving, I thought Dylan thrived last week, right? Yeah. And he should. It's Arkansas State. But finally, we saw this offense come to life a little bit. There was some continuity is the word I'm looking for. There was also some variety to play calling. That was easily the best game I've watched of them on film. That goes without saying. But it was more about the fact that they were efficient in all areas offensively than it was just they put up a lot of yards and points.
I guess the question for me is, where's that creativity been all year long?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a totally fair question because it wasn't there the previous week. I mean, I know last week, guys, I was borderline incensed about the play selection on the drive, and I think it was a fourth down play. But it was far different this week, and I don't know if sometimes you just got to light a fire under those guys in the coaching staff, and sometimes they've got to hit rock bottom at points to realize that things have to change. And I'll be the first to admit, when you're in those rooms, in those dark rooms until midnight and 1 a.m., game planning, you can hunt ghosts a little bit, in particular when you're going to go on the road against Michigan, coming off of a game in which you played so terribly up front. So I don't want to just eviscerate the coaching staff, although I will absolutely agree with you. When you see a game plan like you saw against Arkansas State, coming off of a game plan that was just not anywhere in the same hemisphere against Michigan, you think to yourself, well, what's going on? You know?
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that, but boy, they ran the ball so much more efficiently. And I think it was a variety of the run game. That run game played a huge part of what they were doing in the passing game. You know, Arkansas State, their defensive coordinator, he kind of cut his teeth in the Narduzzi, kind of Mike D'Antonio quarters, you know, aggressive safeties low. So you've got to run the football effectively in order to get the play action and get those plays over the top. And they were able to do that. I thought Jalen McMillan, I mean, obviously his numbers are great, but I thought that the continuity between he and Dylan Morris, guys, probably was, well, it's the best I've seen on film. I haven't watched every single one of their games, but it's the best I've seen on film of those two connecting in particular down the field.
Oh, he looks far better than any other wide receiver on Washington's roster right now, no question. The best in the biz, the college analyst Joel Klatt from Fox Sports joining us here on 950 KJR. Joel, if BYU were a Pac-12 school, they'd be running away with the conference right now.
Yeah, that's right, at least the South Division.
Yeah, do they have a shot at the Final Four, or has the Pac-12 struggles kind of blocked their path because they play 7 games against Power 5 schools, including 5 against Pac-12 teams?
No, their schedule is actually for a non-Power 5 team. Their schedule is way, way more suited to get into the playoff than any of the other teams. Even Cincinnati, you know, and I know Cincinnati's got Indiana on their schedule and they're going to have Notre Dame in a couple of weeks. And granted, they're probably going to get the benefit of the doubt after what they were able to do a year ago. But let's be real about it. Like what BYU is doing, even to be 3-0 through their first 3 games, that's pretty dang impressive.
Yeah.
Dang impressive. And so I think they're going to get some attention. I don't know if they're going to get to the playoff, but I will tell you this. And I posed this on social media over the weekend. You look at their schedule. If they finish 12-0 and Ohio State is 11-1, Clemson is 11-1, then go on and win their respective conference championship games. So those two programs are 12-1 respectively. You tell me who has the better resume based on the actual schedules that they've played. Because I would make the argument that BYU at 12-0 would have a vastly superior resume to Clemson, who would be 12-1 and an ACC champ at that moment.
Joel Klatt, before you go, we don't talk a lot of Cougar football on this radio show, but there are a lot of Cougar fans in the audience. I know they won't admit it, but they're there. There's a lot of talk about getting rid of Rolovich, man. We haven't gotten your take on this. From the controversy with the vaccine now to the blown second-half leads, they got boat raced by USC in the second half in Pullman on Saturday. For all the Cougar fans that are done with Nick Rolovich, not even after a year and a half in Pullman, what do you say to them?
Well, I would encourage those fans. Listen, you can believe what you want to believe, but I would encourage them to separate what the football is from what the politics are. I think, just to be fair to him, I understand, like, there's going to be a lot of people that feel very strongly about the issue with the vaccine, probably on both sides, but that vitriol should not enter into the equation of evaluating him as a football coach. Now, are they in the same, you know, breath or sentence as what they were under Mike Leach? No, they're not. And that's got to be frustrating. Texas Tech is going through this exact same thing because they can't find anybody. They brought a prodigal son home, you know, the favorite son, Cliff Kingsbury. He couldn't really do it. He got fired before he had to go to the Arizona Cardinals and is now having success in the National Football League. There are locations that are really hard to win. I believe Washington State is one of those. It was one of the reasons why I thought Mike Leach was such a good fit at Washington State, is because it's going to take a unique style of coach and a unique system in order to succeed at Washington State. This right now seems to not be working. And when the culture becomes toxic, it's very tough to turn that around. And I know a lot has gone into it, but I would just encourage everybody, try to focus on the football and the evaluation of the football versus the totality of the situation when it comes to what happened in the offseason with his decision to be vaccinated or not.
For my money, Joel, you got the game of the week this week, Wisconsin and Notre Dame. Give us a breakdown or preview.
Well, and here's the best part about this game, I think, is that it's actually in Soldier Field. So it's a neutral site, closer to South Bend than it is Madison. So it's going to feel a bit like a Notre Dame home game that is not on NBC. So I'm pinching myself. I think that it's going to be a fabulous game, and I really do believe that the storylines are great, obviously, with Jack Cohn facing his old team, but also this great defense from Wisconsin, and what can they be, what can they do? They give up 92 yards to Eastern Michigan. This is a team that probably should have beat Penn State, who then went on and beat Auburn last week in the whiteout. So I think this is a very underrated Wisconsin team that is going to be looking for some national recognition against the Irish.
A little breakfast with Joel and Gus, 9 o'clock Pacific on Saturday on Fox from Chicago. All right, man, enjoy the game.
That's what we do, man.
We'll talk next week about UW-Cal and a lot more. Appreciate it, pal.
Thanks, man.
You got it. Have a good one, fellas. Later.
You bet. Joel Klatt with us, courtesy of Venue Kings. Testimonials 49451. Anything goes. Did UW make a mistake with Jay Kaner? How about the Seahawks? How concerned are you after what you saw yesterday at Lumen Field? That's all coming up. Lions Packers at 5:15 tonight, right here on 950 KJR.
Want to listen to Seattle's best sports talk at home? Say, Alexa, play 950 KJR on iHeartRadio. Powered by...
This is Textimonials.
LOL, semicolon parentheses.
Take it away, Dave Softy Mahler and Dick Fain.
All right, we got Packers-Lions coming up, 5:15 from Lambeau, right here on 950 KJR. Kevin Harlan, Kurt Warner. That's the quarterback, by the way, for those that are confused by that name, and I don't blame you. Courtesy of Westwood One, the coach's box, a little bit from Pete Carroll, Jimmy Lake at 5 o'clock tonight. We're live at the Emerald Queen Casino, 49451. Textimonials on the Coors Light text line, keeping Seattle chill. Jackson, what do you got?
This loss was squarely on the offense, and Pete and Shane. No killer instinct on offense and cannot sustain drives, but we have seen the show over and over the last 4 years or so.
When you're on Easter weekend, your wife is over here braiding your hair.
I do think it's in their nature and their DNA to lay off the gas when they're up like that, because it's Pete Carroll's way. It's not Pete Carroll's way to keep getting aggressive and bury somebody and put their foot on their throat and crush them. And I want them to have that mentality. If you're going to have this brand new offensive coordinator, you're going to pay your quarterback as much as you're paying him, you're going to have all these great wide receivers, you're going to have a defense that's still kind of growing a little bit, I think you step on the gas. I don't like backing off. But here's the funny thing, though. The play sheet doesn't say that they backed off the gas.
It doesn't.
Because they didn't run the damn ball. They didn't run the ball yesterday.
Exactly. And Pete Carroll has always been good. Whether we like it or not, he has been great at squeezing and protecting leads. Right? Yeah. It doesn't always feel comfortable.
Right.
But they win the football games usually. And they win the football games because Pete runs it more than most people want him to run it in the third and fourth quarters. And that didn't happen on Sunday.
Well, I think you can also be conservative by throwing the ball. Minimize risk a little bit, if you will. And I just wonder if it's kind of in Russell's DNA to kind of protect the ball and not take chances when they have a lead like that. So I would love to see him be more aggressive, and that means running the ball, throwing the ball. That just means having that mentality that you don't need to worry about turning it over. All right, what's next?
Putting it on defense, I was at the game, and the play call by Kenny Norton was horrid.
Ooh.
They played way too soft in the second half.
Well, they gave up 345 yards of offense in the second half. I don't know of a lot of NFL teams that will allow 345 in one half the entire year, including 171 on the ground. The final time of possession was 42-22 in that game yesterday. So it was a shared breakdown. There's no question about that. Russell Wilson, even in the postgame last night, kind of put it out there on the defense that we barely had the ball. Well, part of the reason why you barely had the ball is because you couldn't do anything with the damn thing when you had it. You had four drives in the final 20 minutes or so of the game after Freddie Swain's touchdown, and you went 12 plays and 16 yards. So, I don't know, man. I mean, I got a hard time not letting any side of the ball off the hook, but for some reason today, my angst is more towards the offense.
My angst is toward the offense. However, tell me if you can sense a theme here on this drive for the touchdown to make it 30-30.
Okay.
Tannehill passed short to Julio
they
Jones.
Checked everything
Tannehill
down.
Passed short to Henry. Yeah. Passed short to Henry. Passed short to McNichols. Passed short to McNichols. I mean, I'm just reading the box right now. And then also, why did Seattle hold on to two timeouts during that drive? The Titans scored a touchdown with 29 seconds left in the game.
Right.
And we had two timeouts left in our pocket.
Which I thought after that score that they were going to find a way to win. I thought the Hawks would go 35 yards
in 29 seconds.
A couple
like
of
we
timeouts,
did the end of the first half.
And they'd get into field goal territory and they'd win the damn game. But you're right. It was check down Charlie. And not just check down. It was in the exact same spot. It was over the middle, right in the heart of the defense. Bobby Wagner, Jordan Brooks, man. Safety play. Come on, guys. What's next?
How did we miss the extra point? Bad snap or bad hold or brain fart?
I thought it was just a brain fart, to be honest with you, by Jason Myers. I mean, look, that's going to happen when they push the PAT back. And I thought if he would have had a chance at redemption, he would have had a really great shot at making that field goal. I can't put this thing on the kicker. I mean, I get it, you know, the fact that he missed an extra point in the end that played a role. But they could have easily gone for two, and they may have made it, and it could have been 31-31 going to regulation.
I got mad at Greg Bell for tweeting that stat out before the game.
Which one?
Jason Myers had made like 35 consecutive field goals or something like that.
That's Greg Bell's fault.
I was like, how dare you do that? Now, it wasn't a field goal that cost him the game, but it was an extra point that cost him the game.
Stats are for losers.
Well, I got no problem blaming Greg Bell. You know that. You want to put the blame on Greg Bell, that's totally fine by me. We're going to break. Packers and Lions are coming up 5:15. Coach's box, baby. What do you say we hear a little bit from Jimmy Lake and Pete Carroll? Next, right here, live from the Emerald Queen Casino on 950 KJR.
Tune in tonight for Monday Night Football with Kevin Harlan. Kickoff at 5:15 on your home for every NFL.
From Monday Night Football, Packers and Lions at 5:15. Headlines, of course, are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
I'm here in the freezing cold getting free chicken sandwiches.
By the way, you need tickets for the Thursday night Ram game. $109 gets you in the door at VenueKings.com. All right, here's what we got. The AP poll is out. Oregon up one spot to 3 after their convincing victory over the mighty program known as Stony Brook. UCLA down 11 spots to 24 after losing to Fresno. Dogs and Cal on Saturday. 6:15 kickoff, 2:15 pregame show from the stadium right here on 950 KJR.
And the Dogs-Beavs game the following Saturday will be a 6 p.m. start in Corvallis. And USC interim coach Dante Williams says that quarterback Keaton Slovis' x-ray on his neck showed no damage. He should be able to practice this week, but will he be the starter?
Oh, you never know. I was wrong about the kickoff time, by the way. It's 6:30, not 6:15 this Saturday, so I greatly apologize for that misstep. Colts and Rams yesterday. Colts lose a close one today. They find out that quarterback Carson Wentz has sprains in both of his ankles. Tampa Bay knocks off the Falcons, and Bruce Arians today saying the Buccaneers have reached out to Richard Sherman to gauge his interest in playing again.
Texas quarterback Tyrod Taylor's got a hamstring injury, could miss as much as a month, but Houston coach David Culley says regardless of Taylor's status, Deshaun Watson will not be activated.
What else we got? Mariners 4 games back with 13 to play. They got 4 games starting tonight against the A's. Tyler Anderson versus Sean Manaea at 6:40 this evening.
Yay. You didn't play it, so I did it myself.
Oh, that's good.
An MRI on Bears quarterback Andy Dalton showed no ligament tear, just a bone bruise. No word on how long he will be out.
All right, let's get to it. The coach's box. Every Monday.
Yay!
There you go. We hear from both Jimmy Lake and Pete Carroll. What do you say we start with Jimmy Lake at UW? His press conference, a opening statement, and then some questions from the assembled media after Saturday's beatdown of Arkansas State.
Well, after watching the film last Saturday, we were very pleased with our execution in all three phases. Pleased with how tough and physical our guys played. And we know there's still a ton to clean up. We had a really good practice yesterday. We know there's always room for improvement. And for sure, even with the score that we ended with on Saturday, there was still lots of improvement in all three phases that we have to clean up. to get to where we want to go. So our guys definitely, it was very exciting to get some results from all the hard work that our team has been putting in. And that was a big emphasis, is, hey, we need some results from these extremely hard practices that we've had. And so we were happy about that. But now we got to go back to work. Got to go back to work. And our guys have already gone back to work. And now we're getting ready to prepare for conference play.
From a strategic perspective, what did you see offensively from the first two games that really made you go, okay, this, we got to change this, this isn't working, that maybe showed up on Saturday?
Yeah, well, us not scoring points in the first two games, it's a fairly easy assumption that we need to put our players in position to go out there, move the football, and put points on the board. I mean, one of our jobs on offense is to score. That's what we're supposed to do. When we get the ball, we're trying to go down and score. Very proud of our offensive line, proud of Dylan Morris, of our wide receivers, our young wide receiver going out there and making plays, and our whole stable of running backs able to run the football. And just one game, we still had tons of improvement to do on that side of the ball, but it was a step in the right direction.
All right, Jimmy Lake there. Part one of the coach's box. Part two is Pete Carroll. Second, I like the fact they played Sean McGrew. I still don't think they're using him the right way. I would love to see Sean McGrew used in space, and they're running in between the tackles, which worked against Arkansas State, but right. Against a team like Cal, UCLA, Oregon down the road, I want to see Sean McGrew get the ball in space more often. And then number two, we talked about this with Joel Klatt. I thought they were a lot more creative. They ran Richard Newton in the Wildcat, faking the sweep to Giles Jackson. Where the hell was that last weekend versus Michigan? It's almost like they were limiting the playbook against the Wolverines to spring something on Arkansas
State.
Yeah,
they were preparing for the Red Wolves. They wanted to make sure that they were ready to go. But, you know, as far as using guys in space, there are just so few guys on this offense that are electric.
He's one of them.
There's only two that are even semi-electric. Giles Jackson and Sean McGrew. You got to get those guys in space. You got to get those guys on bubble screens, just toss it out to them and let them go. You can't just be running Sean McGrew right up the tackles. And then where was Sean McGrew in the second half?
Yeah.
I mean, they used him, and then all of a sudden they stopped using him.
Yeah. It's weird, man. I don't get it. I mean, I'm no genius over here. I know you guys think I'm a genius.
You are.
I appreciate
genius.
That,
yes,
but I don't get it. All right, how about Pete Carroll today with the media after their loss to Tennessee, and Curtis Crabtree opening up the question and answer session with a hard-hitting question for the coach. Ooh. Of the Seahawks.
Pete, you said it was really clear on tape. What stood out? What was clear? What struck you the most when you went back and watched it?
Well, the thing that bothered me the most about the game was how we failed to make the good decisions at the time of the end of the play, and we gave him 75 yards and five penalties, you know, five major penalties, and that was really disruptive in the game. We had slugged it out throughout, and those changes in the field position it just disrupted the flow of the game for us, and you know, it made us adjust the momentum that we would build and big play, and then here we go, we stop them, and now they get the ball first down again, on a third down, a couple plays, it was really obvious that the rest of the game was just a slugfest, you know, for us on defense. And offensively, you know, what was obvious is that we never really found the rhythm, because we scored so quickly in the first half when we needed the running game that needed to be developed during the course of the game. We didn't have it, and so we just didn't finish the game the way I would love to have finished that thing, because we had a chance to hold it and work the football, and so all of those things that kind of seemed clear coming out were pretty obvious watching the film, and there was a game to be won there, you know, and we, that's why it was, you know, it's a real disappointment to let them get away with it.
Yesterday you talked about the penalties and kind of that's on you and you need to be better. What's the process of finding that line between playing with the emotion you want, the fire you guys want, but not having to go too far?
Yeah, you have to be accustomed to, you know, being in that kind of rage that we play in, you know, and know how to manage it. And we've got to stay cognizant of the rules and the, you know, and the planning of, you know, how the referees call the things, you know, and so sometimes the guys, you know, they might lose the interpretation a little bit, but I thought the game was called well. I don't think that there was any calls, you know, of the ones that I'm referring to that were in big question. So it was just a matter. We have to our guys have to just stay aware and make sure that they're mindful of the situations that they're in and make really good choices and decisions and protect us whenever they can.
Do you have any update on DK Metcalf's health? And also, what did you think in general of his game yesterday?
I saw DK. He said he felt fine. That's all I know so far. We don't have him on the report at this point. Well, I think he was trying really hard early, and it happened in both games where he's really trying to set the tempo and try to find the competitive makeup of the game and needed to calm down a little bit. He was trying too hard, but he was just really working hard. I mean, really working hard. And I mean, sometimes it goes too far. He had the two holds on the perimeter screens, and those were important plays to us. He was really mauling the guy he was blocking and just went too far.
Pete, following the long touchdown pass to Freddie in the fourth quarter, how would you assess the way Russell played those final few drives of regulation and then the drive in overtime?
Well, we didn't. There was a couple problems that we had. When Russ had an early snap that messed the timing up on a route, and there was a couple things that didn't allow us to function. We didn't function as well down the stretch, that's what I was really disappointed with. But the last sequence, he was very aggressive with the shots we took, and as we look back, we would say, okay, let's dump the ball off, because we didn't convert on him. But he was had been successful being really aggressive in the game, and he was trying to just keep going, keep pushing it. I wish he would have, been able to keep us moving with a couple checkdowns late in the game, in the overtime in particular. But we were, we were playing with confidence. We were going after it, and he tried to take advantage of it.
Still kind of waiting for DK Metcalf to erupt, and I don't know if I've ever seen a guy get called for a holding penalty and a offensive pass interference call on the same play.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to DK Metcalf yesterday. And my concern would be, if there's a concern, and it's not an overwhelming concern, but there might be a little bit of a blueprint starting to develop, Dick, for how defenses can attack DK Metcalf, and that's frustrate the hell out of him. And have what happened yesterday happen.
Yeah, but the long bomb to Tyler Lockett was caused because of DK Metcalf. I mean, I was watching that. I was watching DK on that play because he had single covers over there. He brought all the defensive attention toward him. Lockett was able to go over the top and wide open. So DK is still a threat even when he's not catching
sure.
the football.
Right, but you need him to fill up the stat sheet.
Yes.
You need DK Metcalf to make plays, especially in the red zone. And I think teams are going to get physical with him. And DK Metcalf has the body. He's got the strength and the ability to fight back. And I just think those 50-50 balls to the sideline, like the one that was thrown to the right side of Russell Wilson on the east side of the stadium, he's got to make those plays.
Yeah.
Against the corner like that, one-on-one, he's got to make those plays. We're going to break, come back, and wrap it up. We got Lions and Packers Monday Night Football from the Emerald Queen Casino next on 950 KJR.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.